This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus, tax. For a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Well, how about that for some Friday content, right? I mean, last night, the news comes down, Tre'Davious White returning to the Buffalo Bills. In case you have not heard, and you're like, oh, let's just turn on the Extra Point Show today to listen to Sal. Yeah, Tre'Davious White's coming back to the Bills. I can confirm that. It will be happening. They have agreed to terms. He has not signed his contract yet. That'll happen at some point. Who knows, maybe today, this weekend, whatever. The draft is next week, but the Bills and Tre'Davious White have agreed to terms on a one-year deal. If you've listened to this show, especially if you've listened to the Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast, I'll say that, you should really be listening to that show. That's iTunes, of course, Spotify, Odyssey app, and on the YouTube channel, at Sal Sports. You should check that out, Matt Bove and I. If you've listened to this show, you've listened to me on Show Up with the Bulldog, on the morning show, and especially Always Game Day in Buffalo, I've been kind of getting there without getting there about Tre'Davious White. I had heard a while ago that they were maybe possibly going to do that, but it wasn't anything certain, right? Because I had heard that they were poking around other veteran corners as well. And lo and behold, James Bradbury, a name I did not hear, by the way, James Bradbury had come in. But I'd been told specifically that Tre'Davious White was a possibility. I was told that Stephon Gilmore could be a guy, Kendall Fuller, guys like that. But Tre'Davious White was always kind of out there for me on the periphery, and that's why I'd always kind of mention it a few times. And, you know, it's one of those things where you hear it, you don't know, you don't want to go out there and say it because you don't know if it's going to happen, and then you kind of look crazy if it doesn't happen. But it was always a possibility to me, and I've mentioned it many times. And thank you very much for those of you who noticed that, and you've tweeted at me and said, hey, you called it. I didn't call it. I didn't know if it would happen for sure, but it seemed like it was possible, and now here we are. And the reason I bring that up is I've also said something else about the Bills and their draft and their roster construction. And this goes hand in hand with what I've said for the last few weeks. To me, it was always, they're going to probably sign a veteran corner at some point. Now, I didn't know it would be before the draft or after the draft. Maybe you wait till after the draft, see what you get, and you do it. But one thing that Brandon Bean has always loved is, well, two things, really. But the one word is certainty. And what I mean by that is Brandon Bean has always loved cost certainty and roster certainty. And that's why the Bills have gotten in front of a lot of these contract extensions early. Think about it. Khalil Shakir, Greg Rousseau, Terrell Bernard, Christian Benford, right? The four big ones that we talked about. Now, I know James Cook is still out there. But the reason why he signs all of them now, not waiting, and I know he's still got one that's in limbo there, because Brandon Bean wants cost certainty for the future. He's always done that. The Bills have very, very rarely, if ever, really gotten into a position where, you know, it's become messy with a contract. It could get that way with James Cook for the first time. We don't know that. I mean, I guess Jordan Poyer's as close as it got, and that really never got messy, right? It was like an OTA. I'm not going to be there, but you know, we all knew Jordan would eventually, they'd settle on something. They did, and he came back. Okay. I guess Gabe Davis was a guy where we really didn't know what happened, but it seemed like all along it was, okay, they're probably going to have to move on from Gabe Davis. He's going to make more in the open market than what the Bills are going to give him. So those are things that are going to happen. But the Bills have their own value on guys, and they want to keep their own players that they've grown. And when the time comes to eventually move on, that's what they'll do. But Brandon Bean has always operated where he wants cost certainty. That's what the extensions are about. The other thing that he always operates under is he wants roster certainty. If you have roster certainty, meaning, okay, I've kind of got this where I need it, it gives me more options as I go forward. Going into the draft is one huge where you have more options, right? You don't want to go into the draft and say, I got to reach for a guy. That could land you on a Kyrie Elam. Now, we all know that Kyrie Elam didn't work out. It was a missed draft pick. There's no doubt about that. Everyone knew the Bills needed a corner and they're going to draft a corner. Now, you could say the same thing this year because I think it's trending towards defensive line, but the Bills clearly still needed a corner this year. Who knows what Tre'Davious White is? I'll get to him in a minute. I want to talk about him, obviously, today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. But from the Bills' perspective, they feel more comfortable having another corner, a veteran corner, who they know, who knows them, who knows each other's, they know the system, he knows the system, the player, what they're getting, in the locker room, everything. That's roster certainty. There's cost certainty, there's roster certainty. Brandon Bean loves both of those things. There's been very rare, it's happened, I think, again, go back to 2022, maybe with corner is one of these times, but it's very rarely happened for the Buffalo Bills under this regime, since Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott took over, that they bet in an offseason with a whole bunch of uncertainty at positions. It's happened. I think wide receiver in 2019, but what'd they do? Go out and sign John Brown and Cole Beasley, right? That's why they do it. They just don't like that. They want to make sure, and you can argue and say they're making bad decisions. You don't like the decision. You don't like Tre'Davious White coming in. You don't like a draft pick they make. That's fine. I'm just telling you from their perspective, signing Tre'Davious White gives them something that they always love. A little more roster certainty. You can plug that guy in. He's a veteran. Put him right there. They love cost certainty. Brandon Bean loves cost certainty. He loves roster certainty. That's how you get to Tre'Davious White, and that's how I get to things that I've been saying for the last few weeks, which are, hey, I think they're going to sign a corner at some point, a veteran corner, and that's going to really allow them to zero more in on defensive line. Because if they go into the draft and still, okay, we got defensive line, we got corner, what do we do here? You know, I think you have a higher chance to kind of miss, right? If that's the way I want to phrase it. But I think now it allows them to focus where I believe they've always wanted to kind of focus a little more on the defensive line, because they still need defensive linemen. They do have uncertainty there a little bit. It's not perfect. It's not like, oh my God, we have all pros at every position. That's not the kind of roster certainty I'm talking about. I just think they want to feel more comfortable knowing they can go into the draft and go, okay, we're good here. We've kind of done a little bit more roster massaging over here at corner or wherever the position may be, wide receiver, whatever. And now we can kind of focus somewhere else. And that way we don't get lost in the weeds here of trying to figure out where to zero in on. I've maintained for the last few weeks, and I still do today, and I think this emboldens me even more, that Tre'Davious White signed, that the Bills are going to draft all defense in their first three picks. They're still going to draft a corner in those first three picks. But I think they go D-line first. And I think they go D-line again at second or third. Now, if they start to move around the board, things change. I'm talking about if they stay relatively where they are, 30, 56, and 60. Three picks in the top 60. To me, they get to 2D linemen in a corner. Because, as much as I just said, they love roster certainty, the biggest uncertain part of the roster right now is D-line. Especially because the Bills have two players who they've signed who are facing six-game suspensions. Now, they are currently on the active roster, okay? And, of course, I'm talking about Michael Hoyt and Larry Ogunjobi. Michael Hoyt and Larry Ogunjobi are on the active roster right now. The Bills have 67 players on their active roster. A couple of operational points here about the roster and how all this works. The Bills will count, and Larry Ogunjobi and Michael Hoyt will count, on their active roster where they have a maximum of 90 players they can bring to training camp. Okay? They're at 67 right now. They will be a part of OTAs and minicamp. They will be a part of preseason games. When the Bills cut down to 53, they will be transferred to a reserve suspended list. They don't have to make the 53. They'll essentially get 55 counting those two. Let's look at it that way. So we'll get 53 other active players, plus those two guys will go on reserve suspended. Once that happens, folks, you got Ed Oliver, Daquan Jones, and Dwayne Carter. That's it. Now, you want to think that Zion Lowe can make the team? That's fine. I'm not going to go that far right now. It's Ed Oliver, it's Daquan Jones, and Dwayne Carter. You have three defensive tackles. So as I just said a little while ago, the one thing the Bills don't love is uncertainty at the roster spot, on the roster. That's kind of what they have at defensive tackle right now, as much as you can have that. Even though, and it's not that uncertain because you still have three mainstays and guys that you know are going to play and be basically starters, right? All defensive tackles are kind of starters in this system because they all play so much. It's a rotation. But they need that fourth guy. Like, that's a spot. You go right now, bam. There's no other spot on this roster. I just tweeted it out, at Sal Sports. Give it a look. At Sal Sports on Twitter /X, I just tweeted out the roster and I asked a question. The question I said was, take a look at this, give me your top three, or heck, top five, Bills needs as of right now. You check that out. That's Getting Connected with Our Fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Folks, I'm looking at this roster, and I'm looking at it from a Bills perspective. Okay? How do the Bills feel about this roster? How do they operate? Because you can go in a lot of different ways of, you don't like this guy, you don't like that guy. Heck, there's people out there saying that, you know, they don't like the tight end group. I don't know. Whatever. I just think from the Bills' side, their perspective, they're looking at this roster going, yeah, we need help at defensive tackle. There's no other spot here where guy's going to be basically, you put him in, he's going to play. Maybe corner, though. Maybe. But that's why you have Dane Jackson and Tre'Davious White. Look, if the Bills draft a corner, even in the first round, he's still got to beat out Dane Jackson, Tre'Davious White, and Jamarcus Ingram. I think that is a much taller ask for any rookie to come in than it is to say, you're playing defensive tackle in our rotation. Like, that's going to happen. A guy gets drafted at 30 at defensive tackle, he's playing this year. A guy gets drafted at 30 at corner, he might be the number three guy. He could be number two. He could start. I don't think it's that certain. Dane Jackson and Tre'Davious White, we know what they feel about these guys. You could make an argument at defensive end or edge as well, but Joey Bosa's there. You have four. Rousseau, Bosa, A.J. Epinesa, and Javon Solomon, who I think they think will take a step. But you could make that argument for sure. 803-0550. What do you think about the Tre'Davious White signing? So operationally, I told you about how it works with the roster, Hoyt and Ogunjobi. They will then transition to being suspended on the suspended list. How it works with Tre'Davious White is this, and this is the, if you don't like the White signing, you're going to not like it even more when I say this. If you like the White signing, you might go, yeah, that kind of sucks, but that's all right. Like, however you want to look at it, here's the deal. Tre'Davious White's contract, we don't know exactly how it's going to break down yet. That's not out there. The base salary, the cap hit, we know it's a maximum value of $6.8 million. Now, the way this generally works, they did this with Matt Milano's contract. Because Tre'Davious White didn't play a ton last year, you can put some incentives in there that are reachable, but they won't count on this year's cap because he didn't hit those numbers last year. That's what we call not likely to be earned. Not likely to be earned are numbers that you didn't hit the year before, so we can't say you're going to hit them now. But if you do, the money goes on next year's cap. Likely to be earned are, if a guy had 50 catches one year and you give him a bonus and say, oh, if you have 50 catches this year, you get $1 million. That's likely to be earned because he did it the year before. So you have to count it that year when you sign him. So my guess is you're going to get a low base salary, a bunch of not likely to be earned incentives that actually he can't attain, and his cap hit's going to be relatively low this year. However, because Tre'Davious White was a June 1st cut last year, a post-June 1 cut last year, and they had to count $4.1 million in the dead cap last year and this year, that doesn't go away. Whatever his cap hit is in 2025, you have to add $4.13 million on to this year's, to the cap, for this year, for the dead cap. It's essentially two separate contracts. It's pre-Tre'Davious, post-Tre'Davious. It's Tre'Davious 1, it's Tre'Davious 2, whatever you want to call it. He's counting $4.13 million no matter what on top of and in addition to whatever he counts in his new deal. When Tre'Davious White was released last year, I think there was a general sentiment of, man, I love that guy, but it just, the last 2 years, two season-ending injuries, and he wasn't the same player, and they have to move on. And I agreed. And I agree with that today, that they had to make that move. He goes to L.A. It did not work out. He was a healthy scratch in L.A. for the Rams. Eventually, he goes to the Ravens. In Baltimore, he played more. He actually started to play even better. But how much better? Where is he right now? We're going to ask Jeremy Kahn from our Odyssey sister station, 105.7 in Baltimore, the Big Bad Morning Show. Jeremy, always great with his time. Love having him on. He's going to join me at 10:30 a.m. I'm going to ask Jeremy Kahn, what was Tre'Davious White in Baltimore when he got there as his season went on into the playoffs? We saw him play in the playoffs here in Buffalo. He had that pass interference call against him that was pretty controversial, I think, from a lot of people that helped the Bills set him up to score. Now, if you remember that one, that was down towards the tunnel end of the end zone on the far sideline, the Ravens sideline. After that game, when it was over, I saw Tre'Davious, caught up with him. Obviously, you know he's got a great personality. He's loved living and being in Buffalo, and you know he was a beloved figure here by many fans. So caught up with him, talked to him, and I said to him, "Hey, you're gonna be a free agent at the end of the year, right? What do you think? Any chance to come back here? What do you think? You still want to play?" He goes, "Oh," he said, "not only do I want to play, I would love to come back to Buffalo." That's what he told me. Then, after he says that, as the weeks go by, is when I start to hear, you know what? Bills are poking around, veteran corners. Tre'Davious White's name is out there. It started to make sense, and here we are today. Bills signed Tre'Davious White. They're going to. They agreed to terms. That will happen. We have much more at our website, WGR550.com. We'll take your phone calls here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Friday. Good Friday to you. Thanks for being with me. We will take some phone calls. We'll also get to your tweets, and on top of everything, we'll get to the Sabres locker room with Paul Hamilton. Today is locker cleanout day with Paul Hamilton down in the Sabres locker room. When we have some sound throughout the show, we'll bring that to you from Paul down in the Sabres locker room. Sabres missing the playoffs for a 14th straight season, but ending on a good note, beating the Flyers last night 5-4, and Lindy Ruff securing his 900th career win. All right, we will with the Sabres, right? That is, wait, let me, is that with the Sabres there, Evan, or is it overall Lindy Ruff? I forgot what that stat was with his career wins. I'm going to get this right now. See? All right, Lindy Ruff coaching record. I should know this, but it's his 16 years career. There it is, 900 wins total. 900 wins total. Oh, yeah, for the Sabres, it was 600. That's where I was getting confused. Remember, he hit 600 with one club, 900 overall for Lindy Ruff. 607. For the Sabres, 165 for the Dallas Stars, 128 for the New Jersey Devils. Let's go out to the phone lines. Let's get to Kenny in Niagara. Hi, Kenny. You're on WGR.
Hi, Kenny. I'm sorry.
You're Kenny.
Hi, Sal.
I'm Sal. That's okay. Sometimes people get nervous on the radio. It happens to me all the time, pal. What's up?
Yes, first-time caller. I'd just like to say I'd rather go for a young quarterback in the draft because Mitch Trubisky is not the answer for a backup. It's why.
Well, I'll tell you what. If Josh Allen gets hurt, it doesn't matter, kind of. So, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter. If Josh Allen gets hurt and misses extended time, it doesn't matter who you put in. You're probably not going to be the same team. You're definitely not going to be the same team, and I don't know how much of a chance you have anyway.
No, I understand that, but everybody's talking about defense.
Wait a minute. I just want to get this straight, Kenny. You want to draft a quarterback early?
Yeah, I would. I would take. I mean, we have the 30th pick.
Do you want to draft a quarterback with the 30th pick?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Kenny. I appreciate it. That's not happening, and no way should it. Let's go to Rich in Lakeview. Hi, Rich. Go ahead. You're on WGR.
Hey, Sal. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks.
I'm envious. For anybody in the local media, you take the best vacations everywhere. So I think you turn every good Friday into a great family for Max and the family. So that's
well, let me just say this, Rich. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, and one of the things that, you know, I grew up, I'm just going to, let me just digress here for a minute. If you allow me, I'll say this. I grew up, I'm the son of an Italian immigrant. My father came to this country when he was 9 years old. He didn't graduate high school. He went, I believe he got his GED to go in. He was Vietnam era Army. And my mom's a South Buffalo gal. And nobody in my family ever went to college. I never traveled when I was younger. We just didn't have the means to do things like that. Right. I didn't grow up, having the ability to do a lot of the things that a lot of families and kids that I knew did. And, you know, as I got older and I, you know, took ownership of my career and wanted to get to where I went to, and I'm here. And along the way, I met a woman and she's from Germany and we've been married 22 years and my wife opened my eyes to traveling and going to Europe and around the world. And then we had Max and it's just become a part of our life and I love it. And I love seeing the world and showing my son the world. And I appreciate that. But that's why I just think it, you know, for me to be where I am now, to have the ability to do those things matters a lot, but also to give my son that ability.
That's great. I just love it. And vicariously, through social media, we get to do it, so I'm glad you post a lot of stuff to do that.
Thanks, Rich.
You know, Tre'Davious White, I'm all for it. I mean, first of all, if it's good for the room, we still don't know, and you're embedded a little bit more than we are, what the vibes are going to be with the James Cook thing. Is it going to get bad? I mean, OTAs and minicamps right around the corner, so that's going to be a thing. But I think about it. You look at the cap, you see the 6.8 now and the 4 in dead money. If you look back.
It's not going to be 6.8 now, though. It'll be a low cap hit probably with a bunch of incentives that won't count on this year's cap. That's my guess.
Well, whatever it was, I look at it this way. Even if he's lost a step or three, would it have been worth that money in January to have him there instead of like an Elam or something like that? I think it would have been an upgrade. And that, listen, the Bills have been hit with the injury bug so much, and I think you hit it right the nail on your head. Cost certainty and character certainty, I think, was a big deal with this move. And I'm all for it. I don't see a negative for it. I mean, a lot of us who weren't picked first in gym class can say all about anything about Tre'Davious's physical ability after two knee surgeries and, of course, putting Humpty Dumpty back together again at his age is one thing. But, again, you know, character certainty, play certainty, and as a safety valve, I'm all for it. And I think it's a great PR move, and I think it's a great roster move.
Thanks a lot, Rich. I will say this to your point. I don't disagree with you necessarily about Tre'Davious. I'll go a bit different, though. I think if they have Dane Jackson last year, things might be different. You know what I mean? Like a guy that they really could be a solid, high-floor guy. If you're in that championship game and you have Dane Jackson, isn't that a little bit different once Benford goes out? I think it is. And
absolutely.
That's a reason you go out and get a guy like that, and Tre'Davious is an extension of that as well. Thanks a lot. Green Kenmore, before we get to Jeremy Kahn at the bottom of the hour. What's up, Jerry?
Hey, real quickly, on the Sabres, I don't want to hear any press conference the next 2 days. We've seen 14 years of locker clean-out day. Stop telling us what you're doing. Just do it. I don't need to be in – I'm no interest in telling us how we're going to be better next year because it hasn't happened yet. Now, quickly on the draft, I'm tired of people telling us we should trade and get fewer picks because there's not that many roster spots on the team. I want to draft 10 players every year and have 10 players make the team. Because rookie contracts are your lifeblood once you get that franchise quarterback that takes up 25% of your cap. You need 30 guys on rookie contracts and cost certainty. I know there's not as many roster spots, but I'd like 10 guys to show us what they have and make this team. Cut some guys that aren't as good anymore. It's the most important thing you do every year once you get to this point.
They drafted 10 last year, and 9 made the team, and the only one who didn't was because he was a Pathways program guy, Travis Clayton, and he went on the practice squad. So there you go, Jerry. They did it last year. They had 9 out of 10 make the team, and really 10 out of 10 because that kind of was a different scenario.
Well, I don't want to hear that we need 7 picks because there's only 7 roster spots. You make 10 picks.
By the way, I apologize. I'm wrong about that. Daquan Hardy did not make the team, obviously. He was on the practice squad. So Daquan Hardy did not. Travis Clayton did not. Tylan Grable did, and he actually became the swing tackle before he got hurt. But yeah, Jerry, I hear you, and I understand. I think it's a good point. I see both sides to that because I don't know if there are 10 spots to make it, but you're right. If you could have 10 guys on rookie contracts contributing in some capacity, that's really great for how you have to pay the top end of your roster and how you balance that out. We'll get to Jeremy Kahn. Big Bad Morning Show in Baltimore. What did Tre'Davious White look like in Baltimore last year with the Ravens after this timeout in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show?
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on sports networks. Availability varies by zip code and package. New customers. Service renews monthly unless you cancel. Choice package required. Restrictions apply.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Throwing to the right, intercepted! Picked off by Buffalo! Back up the sideline! Tre'Davious White, the rookie, still on his feet! To the 10! And that'll seal it for Buffalo!
Tre'Davious White, he had 18 picks in a Bills uniform before moving on last year, went to the Rams, eventually the Ravens, coming off the ACL injury that occurred on Thanksgiving night in New Orleans a few years ago. And then, of course, a year later, after the recovery, he comes back and tears his Achilles against the Miami Dolphins. That was a tough scene to be right there on the sidelines and see that. And, of course, a fan favorite for many years, not only on the football field, but, of course, the Tre'Davious White Goalie Academy, right? We all remember the Goalie Academy. I don't know if he did the Goalie Academy in Baltimore. I don't think there was any of a NHL team, but Jeremy Kahn can answer that maybe for us. He joins me right now on the Western Hotline. 105.7, our Odyssey sister station, the Big Bad Morning Show. Good morning to you, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. What's up, Sal? How are you?
I'm well. Do you are you a night owl? You texted me overnight to respond to my text. You don't have to get into details here. Are you a night owl? Is that what it is?
No, it's the exact opposite. So when you texted me, it was like 7:30 last night, I think. And
yeah,
I put my phone up early, especially when I'm watching baseball games, because my TV feed is like 30 seconds behind everybody else. So if I'm on social media, or if I'm am watching the game and all of a sudden it's like, man, it's right, a big at bat. And then all of a sudden you get the home run call and you're like, oh, man. So it feels anticlimactic when you're watching the game. So I put my phone up. I texted you when I got up this morning at like 4 o'clock. I'm going, I'm sorry this is early, but I just wanted to let you know I'm available if you need me. But my apologies.
I love it. Do you normally get up at 4 a.m.? Is that because, oh, yeah, you have to. You do the morning show, right?
Yeah. Every Monday to Friday, yeah. And it's fun on the weekends, too, because then you're waking up randomly at 4 a.m. getting ready for work and not realizing
it. I totally get how that is. No worries at all, brother. I appreciate you coming on today and always appreciate your time. All right. Tre'Davious White, the Bills, you know, re-sign a fan favorite back in Buffalo. I think there's a lot of debate going on what he actually was last year. We know it didn't work out with the Rams. Then he goes to Baltimore. What did you see from Tre'Davious White, Jeremy, once he got to Baltimore and then through his short tenure there?
I mean, he played a decent amount here, I think, in kind of situations in that rotation they were using in their secondary. Nothing stood out to say, hey, this guy's done. But there also wasn't anything that really stood out to say, hey, that they really want to bring him back. I think the Buffalo thing's a perfect fit for him, someplace he's comfortable. Because as you pointed out, I mean, this is a guy that was up for Defensive Player of the Year not that long ago. And mm-hmm. some of the injuries and, I guess, you know, Father Time, of course, he hasn't looked the same. But I think he's a nice depth piece. I think if you're relying on him to be that guy opposing the number ones on the other team, then you're going to be upset about that.
The Ravens last year, you know, just refresh my memory, what they normally ran scheme-wise. Mostly zone, mostly man. I think in that game against the Bills, they kind of switched it up a little bit, and that's why the Bills, they were getting in their face. They were a little bit more man. But did they play a little bit more of the other last year as it went on?
So, I mean, they do both, and they really do mix it up. Since Mike McDonald was here, the head coach in Seattle, he developed this scheme that Zach Orr kept and started running. That's why when you look at their pass rushers, when they won the Triple Crown on defense, that's the year that they lost in the playoffs to, was that the Titans or it was Friday Chiefs? Doesn't matter. A couple of years ago, they had the best team in football, 2 years ago, and in my opinion, and they had the Triple Crown on defense, but there were no marquee pass rushers. It was the scheme. That's the year that Geno Stone, yeah, I don't know if anybody knows that name, he got a big contract from the Bengals. He had all these interceptions, and he'd never had that before. I mean, contract year, and it kind of took off. So they mix it up, and then having a player like Kyle Hamilton on that side of the ball, it allows mm-hmm. them to do so much because they can use him as a pass rusher, as a linebacker, but they definitely mix it up. So it's really hard to say. The Ravens don't have a base defense, basically, because depending on the opponent, you'll see them do a bunch of different things.
I'm looking at Trey White's snap counts from last year. He didn't start any games, but he generally played about 30-35% of the snaps. There was some lower, a little bit, some a little bit higher. What was his role? Like, when would he come in? Was there any specific rhyme or reason or personnel?
No, I think it's more or less of who they're playing and what their personnel is. Like, he wasn't, again, he wasn't starting, as you pointed out, but he was a guy that got his snaps. So they definitely used a lot of defensive backs. If you want to talk about running nickel or dime, you'd see them do that on occasion. But there are certain teams that if they saw something in their makeup, they would totally change up what they do on defense as far as the scheme against them. I mean, they're a traditional 3-4 team, but they do a lot of other different things to try to confuse the quarterback.
Jeremy Kahn joining me here on the West Hur Hotline. The Ravens and Bills will play once again this year. That game will be in Buffalo. I'm expecting a primetime or a very, very least a 4:25 p.m. game. We did our annual podcast with the schedule maker, Mike North, that you might have seen. And, you know, basically he kind of said all those games at home for the Bills this year, lots of them Chiefs, Bengals, Ravens, and Eagles, very little chance, I think, anything's at 1 o'clock. So I think you're lining up another big Bills-Ravens matchup, this time in Buffalo in the regular season, Jeremy.
Do you like playing the better teams at home and the easier ones on the road because most teams are better at home? It's funny because, like, you look at it, and as you're saying, like, Kansas City, Baltimore, I guess we got to put a couple other teams up top in the AFC as well that are going to be good next year. But schedule-wise, these should be marquee games. We all know who the quarterbacks everybody wants to see. And anytime Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes, and Lamar Jackson, I don't care which two of them meet up, it should be the marquee game for the week.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And yeah, I think you'd rather generally have your harder games at home. And, you know, the road schedule is definitely a little bit different for the Bills. That home schedule is pretty tough for them, as it is for, you know, obviously teams who finish where the Ravens or where the Chiefs or where the Bills have. That being said, what have the Ravens done this offseason so far, and what are they looking at as we head into next week's draft?
I mean, does nothing count as anything? They brought in D-Hop, and they also – they brought in some cornerback depth. Now I'm blanking on the kid from Tennessee that they signed. But Awuzie, like, they have some talent on the backside. I think realistically when they go into the draft next week, this is a team that doesn't necessarily have a must or a need. Like, I think pass rush is imperative for them. But if you're looking at them, they really didn't have to do much in the offseason. They had to really work some stuff in-house. And we still wonder, is Mark Andrews going to be on the team after the draft? The Ravens have never traded a player during the draft. As they pointed out this week, they did trade Hollywood Brown, but they said that trade was done on Monday and they just didn't tell anybody when he went to Arizona. So the big pickup for them, I guess you could say, in the offseason was DeAndre Hopkins, if you think it's a big pickup. But again, they're asking him to be their third wide receiver. So to me, it's more about depth there than anything.
Obviously, we saw what, you know, Mark Andrews went through on the field and off the field last year here in Buffalo. And now there's a lot of talk about, you know, where his future lies in Baltimore. What are you hearing about Mark Andrews and where does this thing go?
So, again, like, this is something where we 100%, I mean, we have two big things in Baltimore that you got to figure out is what's happening with Justin Tucker and what are you doing with Mark Andrews? And then they'd like to get Lamar to an extension, get Derrick Henry possibly to an extension after seeing Saquon Barkley get his, just to make sure that they can allocate some of the money for what they believe is a pretty good window right now to try to win. The sad part is, like, I hate the fact that Mark Andrews has to go out in his final game being a fumble and the easiest two-point conversion to catch in the history of two-point conversions, and he drops it, because that's not who he is. I mean, he's still an upper echelon tight end. The issue for the Ravens is that they have all three of their tight ends come up next year, and you have a young stud like Isaiah Likely. That's the guy you want to pay and the guy you want to make your tight end one, right, eventually. And then Charlie Kohler is their blocking tight end. He's up. So this isn't something the Ravens typically run into, where that the front office is so good at making sure all the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, and playing chess in this league where they're thinking three moves ahead of everyone else. But it is kind of odd to see all of your tight ends come up at once, especially two of them being, you know, what I would deem to be premier tight ends.
So you open the door to Justin Tucker. I'm curious where that lies right now. Obviously, the allegations are out there. What is happening with that, and how does this ultimately play out, do you think?
So I actually know a handful of people that were – actually, three girls that were involved with this. And, again, like I have to be careful of what I say, but I believe every one of them. They've all told me the stories. They don't know each other, and their stories all add up and sound exactly the same. I don't know that anything comes of it because of the length of time that it's been gone, and it's affecting Ravens fans. And it's you look at it because Justin Tucker's been the greatest kicker in the history of the league, like bar none. He's been amazing off the field here locally. But when you look at that, you just can't overlook it. And I think the Ravens know what they need to do. I don't know if they're waiting on the league to kind of say something or do something, but we're coming up on June 1st with the cuts that were supposed to happen. And he has to be one of them. I can't see him on this roster. And I do believe his failures last year, the missed kicks and just having that tough season. I had heard this stuff was going on in the middle of the season, but couldn't run with it until it officially became the story. So I think that's what was affecting him as well. I still think he's a good kicker, if that matters to you. I just kind of question the person he is now.
Jeremy Kahn, 105.7, the Big Bad Morning Show in Baltimore, Odyssey sister station. I always, and we've had this conversation every year. We had this conversation, I think, before the playoff game as it relates to John Harbaugh, and I related to Sean McDermott. The difference, obviously, is Harbaugh has a Super Bowl championship, a Lombardi. But I feel like the fan base is kind of in the same spot in both cities with these head coaches, which is, hey, I mean, you have these MVP quarterbacks. You've had all these years. How come you can't get over the hump? Let's maybe get to somebody who can. Is that what's happening there?
I mean, there are still people here that do the old, if you fire Harbaugh, who are you going to get that's better than him? And I keep saying the same thing. Was before Harbaugh got here. And oh, by the way, Harbaugh wasn't getting the job if Jason Garrett accepted it. Then his wife watched The Wire and said, I ain't moving there. So they didn't go, you know, we didn't end up with Garrett. We ended up with Harbaugh, which is a great thing. But you got to honestly look back at the Super Bowl he won. That was the worst Ravens team that they had that ever made a run like that. In the history. I mean, that team, they had a thing called flaccoing. He threw a pick six against Denver, and Flacco was laying down with his hands on the ground and his face in the dirt as he dove for a player running down the sideline. And we're going, oh, my God, this team sucks. And then they just got hot. I mean, Flacco had the same run as Joe Montana with 11 picks or 11 touchdowns and zero picks. So, yeah, I mean, I keep talking about it because I do think Harbaugh's a good coach, but is he a good coach that's got them as far as they can go? Or am I not being fair to him that he's a much better coach? Because I do think he's a great leader of men. The thing I question about Harbaugh is X's and O's personally. And, you know, that's for me being a guy that's been doing sports talk radio for 25 years. I think X's and O's is the most important thing when it comes down to kind of getting your team ready. And we've questioned the playoffs over and over again. Like, why did you run the football six times with your running backs when you had the best running game in football? You know, like things like that where you're going, I don't understand why this happened. So, I think it's eerily similar, except for the fact that Harbaugh has won Super Bowl. But even that year was kind of a fluky, if you ask me.
Is that true about Jason Garrett's wife? She watched The Wire and said, I don't want to go to Baltimore.
That's what the rumor was. And again, if you buy into this stuff, but if you look it up, you'll see stories online saying that she was afraid to move to Baltimore.
I have to tell you, my wife and I love The Wire. It's one of our favorite all-time shows. It is absolutely amazing. I mean, I'm sure, you know, obviously there's a lot there, and it's pretty heavy, right? And you go back and watch now even, you see, like, it was really heavy. Michael B. Jordan, by the way, I mean, he was this skinny kid who was acting in The Wire, you know, back in the day right there. But I'm sure people in Baltimore, how do people in Baltimore feel about The Wire and everything that brought with it?
Oh, they love it. I mean, my co-host is on The Wire, so...
Wow.
Norris, who's one of my co-hosts, he's the bald white cop that, I mean, if you watch it, you'll see him. But they loosely, he was a former police commissioner here in town, and they loosely based the black commissioner on the show, and forgive me, I forget his name, they loosely based what happened to him was the same thing that happened to Norris here. But, like, he had a lot of input on the show. And the one thing he tells me, and I'll give you two quick stories about it, the Baltimore accent is god-awful. You know, when people are talking like this and they don't know what's going on around here, we're going to go down the ocean. That accent is terrible. and they had the actors trying to do Baltimore accents, and then they did a testing of it, and people were wondering what was going on. They said, why are they talking like that? Like, some people actually thought some of the actors were special needs. Like, it's the accent's that bad. And so they obviously had to switch it up, and then that's why you don't hear any of the guys on the show doing a Baltimore accent. But the thing that Ed loved the most about the show is it kind of finishes how it starts. Like, hey, this war on drugs, no matter how good you get at it, it's always going to be here. So when one of the drug dealers gets knocked off, another one steps up, you know. So it's that constant battle between good and bad, if you will.
Before I let you go, you know I'm a Yankee fan. I know you're a big Orioles guy out there in Baltimore. It just seems like I was all aboard the Orioles 2 years ago. I thought this was going to be the team, and then a bit of a disappointment, you know, going into last year, actually, I should say. But so far, again, 8-10. What's the explanation for what's happening with this Orioles club?
I mean, look, it's easy for somebody like me to say injuries. The right. fan base is really upset that they didn't spend money in the offseason or spend the type of money they wanted them to. I think the contract that Max Fried got was ridiculous, and the Yankees are probably thankful as hell right now that they did sign him. The Orioles offered Corbin Burns $45 million a year over 4 years. He wanted to go to Arizona. They were going to have to overpay for it. We thought Garrett Crochet might come here, and then the Red Sox make the move for it. The Orioles have three huge prospects in Sam Basayo, a catcher that's in the minor leagues, Kobe Mayo, who they sent back to the minor leagues, who's killing it, and they also have Jackson Holliday. Every team that calls them the trade, they asked for one of those three players, and the Orioles are like, no. And I think that's why we finished outside the Garrett Crochet thing. That being said, they're banged up as all hell, man. I mean, Grayson Rodriguez, he might be done for the year. We don't know. He was supposed to have a stint here where he's pitching, and they had to cancel it because he had some soreness in his elbow. And then you look at Zach Eflin, who they traded for at the trade deadline, who has just been a godsend for us. He gets hurt. So now you have this who's who of pitching with a Japanese player. You've got Dean Kramer here, who nobody really like. He's just kind of a middle of the pack guy. And then you have Charlie Morton and a rookie. So it's like their starting pitching is so wanting right now. They had 10 starters to start the season, and then six of them got hurt. So and Gunnar Henderson started the season on the injury report. Colton Cowser got hurt, who was up for rookie of the year. This is a very deep team, and I think they're fortunate to be 8-10. But if they get healthy, they can be a problem in the American League.
Is it too early to make any definitive judgments on Holliday? I mean, he came up last year. He struggled. He's only 21 years old.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be a stud, man. He had a grand slam the other day. It's so funny. Everybody was throwing out all the – because he's hit two grand slams in his first 2 years, and then they're listing all the players he has more grand slams than. Like, it's like that means anything. You know, it's just coming up with the bases loaded, I guess. But he is – he's a really, really good player. The fan base is getting frustrated with their manager, Brandon Hyde, because – the tinkering with the lineup, he's a big lefty-righty guy, so a lot of the left-handed hitters sit when they face left-handed pitching, and our team looks dreadful in that lineup when they grab a bunch of these bench guys and throw them in. It looks like you've got three outs at the bottom of your lineup, and you're hoping your studs do something up top.
Jeremy, always appreciate your time, brother. I'm sure we'll talk again down the road. We'll catch up soon, but thanks a lot for this. Enjoy the rest of the baseball season. We'll be in touch when it comes to the Yankees and Orioles again, I'm sure, buddy.
Absolutely, man. Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, you got it. Jeremy Conn right there from our Odyssey sister station, 105.7, the Big Bad Morning Show. Yeah, I love talking baseball with some guys around, different markets around the country. The Orioles and Red Sox. We haven't done that in a while with the Red Sox. I haven't had a Boston guest on in a while. You know why? Because the Patriots haven't been that relevant. Now, I do get Evan Lazar on, I should say, just to talk about them. But, you know, then you get into a little bit more of that stuff. It's pretty cool. Blue Jays are off to a nice start, 11-8, by the way. Yankees win last night in Tampa at their own spring training facility. They played at Steinbrenner Field because the Trop got damaged by the hurricane, so the Rays are playing all their home games at the Yankee spring training site, and that's where they played the game last night. Yankees, their starter gets chased in the second inning, and yet they had to go to the bullpen the entire game and wind up winning the game. They're in 12-7 right now, have the tied for the best record in the American League. And with the New York Mets, by the way, Yankees and Mets, both 12-7. We will take a timeout. We're going to hear from some Sabres players in the locker room. I know that Jason Zucker and Alex Tuch have already spoken. Paul Hamilton is down there. We'll take your phone calls as well. 803-0550 and also online on Twitter/X at Sal Sports. Get connected there. Getting connected with our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. And this is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. All right, this is why I love the NFL draft and why I love social media. We had a caller named Kenny earlier who said, I think the Bills should draft a backup quarterback. Mitch Trubisky is not the answer. Totally logical take. I agree that maybe they should look into a younger quarterback. I don't think they'll do it. I think they're more comfortable having a veteran because if Josh goes down, you at least you don't want to have a super young guy, at least a guy that can game manage that's been around the league. But either way, then he comes on, Kenny, and he says, basically, they should draft one at number 30. Yes, a 30th pick overall, draft a backup quarterback because Mitch Trubisky is not the answer at backup quarterback. Never mind that Josh Allen just signed a $300-plus million contract extension. Anyway, so we all know that that's obviously ridiculous. And I tweeted out that Kenny said this. I said, hey, I had a first caller at WGR, said that the Bills should draft a backup quarterback at number 30. And then I wrote, thoughts to all of you. And I have a lot of people actually giving me legitimate thoughts on this. Folks, it was, I'm being sarcastic and facetious and fun, even putting it out there into the social media sphere. So, yes, but people actually think I actually wanted your thoughts on that actually possibly being the case. No, it's just having some fun. But either way, you can look at it, you can tweet me, and you can get with me at Sal Sports, and of course at 803-0550. We are going to get down to the Sabres locker room when we return. Jason Zucker has spoken. Alex Tuck has spoken. We'll get you some of that sound from Paul Hamilton after this timeout on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Actually, I have people debating and talking about that Bills possibly not saying that nobody's actually coming and saying they should take a quarterback at number 30, like a backup quarterback for Josh Allen. But actually thinking that I took that seriously, that to put it out there if they to be a debate, but just having fun. We had a caller that suggested that earlier, but that's the fun of the NFL draft. You just, you know, people have their own ideas what the team should do and where they should go. So that's a week from, yesterday. We'll be in round 2 and 3 a week from tonight down at One Bills Drive. So a couple house cleaning items here. Welcome back to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you. We will have, on Tuesday, I will be down at One Bills Drive because we will have Brandon Bean talk about the draft because it's the pre-draft press conference the Bills do every year. And Josh Allen will speak to the media. Why is that? Because the Bills actually start off-season workouts next Monday. The Bills start off-season workouts next Monday. That is where they can work with conditioning, strength and conditioning. They can't do anything football related with actual football coaches. You can't see position coaches, head coach on the field. Strength and conditioning coaches only. But that's when their 9-week program, maximum 9-week program begins. I think the Bills are doing 8 weeks this year total. There's a OTA week in there they normally have that they're not doing this year. I think they're doing 2 instead of 3 this year. So not sure exactly why that is. Maybe I'll ask Sean McDermott, you know, if they altered that for a specific reason. But Monday starts their offseason program. And Josh Allen will speak to us on Tuesday. Maybe we'll hear from Tre'Davious White at some point. Obviously, that's big news today. Tre'Davious White re-signing with the Bills. They have agreed to terms. That has been confirmed to me and WGR, but he has not yet signed his contract. At some point, that will happen. Maybe we'll hear from Tre'Davious White. We'll hear from Josh Allen Tuesday. And we'll hear from Brandon Bean Tuesday before the draft. The draft kicks off Wednesday night. That will be first round. Remember last year, it's Wednesday night. Why did I say Wednesday? Thursday night. That will be the first round. Remember last year, they didn't even pick in the first round. They traded down a couple times and picked on Friday night, the first pick of the second round. Who knows? Maybe that happens again this year. The Bills currently hold 3 picks on those first 2 nights, pick number 30, number 56, and number 60. We are tracking everything, all of the transactions, all of the draft picks, everything about this offseason for the Bills, coaching moves for the team, in and out, home and away opponents, everything you can imagine is at our website. Just look for the WGR Buffalo Bills offseason tracker, and everything is right there for you. In the meantime, last night, the Sabres ended their season. Another season of missed playoffs. 14 straight years. The only team of the 4 major North American professional sports, baseball, football, basketball, hockey, the only other organization that has been out of the playoffs longer and having a longer playoff drought is the New York Jets, who made the playoffs in 2011, 2010 season, they played a playoff game in January of 2011. The Bills, the Sabres played playoff games in April of 2011. That's it. That's the last time. 14 years ago. They had a nice little bump and run at the end of the season. Then it kind of tailed off again. Last night, they beat the Flyers 5-4. Lindy Ruff gets his 900th career victory. Eventually, we will hear from Kevin Adams and Lindy Ruff. But today, locker cleanout day. Our Paul Hamilton is down there. Alex Tuch, who put together a fantastic season individually. I think a very much Selke-worthy nomination season for Alex Tuch. Did I read right, Evan? Did he break a record for block shots by a forward in a season? Is that what I read last night?
Yes, you are correct. They even announced it in the stadium that he broke the record. I was at the game last night.
So. In the arena, you mean, yeah.
Did I say stadium?
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, I got in KeyBank Center, the arena. Do you call a stadium? Do we call that a stadium? I call it an arena. You guys, you can call it a stadium.
I think
stadiums to me aren't that. The arenas are smaller, right? Like that.
Stadiums, I think of are outdoors.
But you called it a stadium.
I guess I was. You know
that's what
I'm
saying,
Sal.
I do know what you mean. I just wanted to make sure we're on the same page here.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Listen. All right. Don't worry. Bill's drafting a backup quarterback at 30. Listen. Alex Tuch. He spoke with Paul Hamilton and other media members a short while ago down at KeyBank Center. The Sabres Arena. Here is Alex Tuch from the locker room.
Look at how the season ended for, 6-7 weeks. You guys played some winning hockey where you won some hockey games. It'll be somewhat different next year when you start. There'll be some different players, some that won't be here. Can things like that carry over from season to season, or doesn't that usually happen?
Yeah, no, I think it can. I definitely think it can. It's something that we have to focus on as a group and on an individual level too. Where you left off the season, on an individual level, you're either happy or unhappy about it, and it's up to you to make that choice of whether or not you want to be better. And then as a team, we have to push to be better, because obviously this year was a failure in all of our minds. But I think we made great strides in our game the last 20 games or so. Still not good enough, I think. We can still be better, and we're going to be focusing on it. There's going to be a lot of talks about it, and words only mean so much, though. You have to put words into action.
You know, Alex, the importance of those 20 games comes about, I think, because it shows the kind of team people thought you could be, and you actually went out on the ice and did it. When you were in that 13-game winless streak, and the sense was that, you know, that might have killed the season. Was there almost a sense of disbelief that that was going on with this group and that you couldn't just figure out a way to buy one to get out of that? And just, you know, Darlene's not playing. We all know that. But what was the sense during that time of, you know, how could this be happening, given even the fact the season had started, you know, pretty well after the first three games?
Yeah, no, obviously missing Dallas is huge. But as a group, I think it, at times it was unlucky bounces. At times we weren't playing good enough by any means, and that can snowball. But I don't think that there was this sense of like oh, we're just going to keep losing. I think every time we went into a game, we thought we could win because we knew we could win. I don't think that ever faltered. I just think that at times we just let teams back in games. At times we weren't able to capitalize on opportunities. I think that if we play a little bit more honest, a little bit more consistent, things like that don't happen. And I think habits don't creep into your game that can ultimately affect and create a 13-game winless streak. I think that that's something that, like I said, we have to focus on as a team and to make sure that doesn't happen. But, I mean, you can go back and 82 games, you can look at, oh, if we did this, this would have happened. And you can nitpick all you want, but over the course of the 82-game season, we just weren't good enough, and we know that we need to be better. Whether or not you lose 13 in a row or you win 20 in a row and miss the playoffs, it doesn't matter what happens in those streaks. It's more of a shift-by-shift basis. It's more of a game-by-game basis that you have to look at it.
So what gives you optimism that you guys can accomplish your goal next season? I mean, you have a lot of young players. I've heard, you know, guys like Nathan MacKinnon say you can't win with young players in this league. So, it's just given as many young guys as you have, what gives you optimism that you can you know, reach that summit.
All those young guys are going to be a year older come next season, and that means they have a full season more under their belt. I know we have a young team, but we have a lot. I think we're each and every year we're gaining more experience as a team. And I think that helps a lot. That goes a long way. And I have a lot of faith in each and every one of those guys in that locker room personally. And I know that I know each guy can be better than they were this year. I know they're all going to have really good summers, and I'm going to help try to push that along, and myself included. I thought I had a good year, but I want to have a great year next year.
Alex, you've been here for years now. The season results have been the same, not making the playoffs. But what made this one different besides ultimately not reaching the postseason?
Honestly, not reaching the postseason made it pretty similar. I think that's the end goal. Honestly, the end goal is winning the Stanley Cup. It's not even making the playoffs. You have to make the playoffs to be able to do that, obviously. So that's a stepping stone. But sitting here and knowing you have a long summer ahead, just flat out sucks. No sugarcoating it. It's a place that none of us want to be at. And, like I said, I'm going to try to do everything in my power to make sure we're not here, sitting here talking to you guys in April, whatever it is, come next season.
Alex, you've got one more year left on your contract. Obviously, that next contract's going to be potentially, you know, the rest of your career. Where's your head at on that as you, you know, get ready for the summer and just the thought of potentially, you know, spending the rest of your career here?
Yeah, I haven't given it too much thought, honestly. I was really focused on this year. I mean, I had some goals in mind for this year, playing 82 games, and I try to grow as a player each and every day, but I haven't given too much thought. I think through the CBA, I don't even think that they can talk to my agent until July 1st or anything like that. And when it comes to that, I'm hands off. I let my agent do all that. And I love it here in Buffalo. I really enjoy my time here. And I would like to win here in Buffalo. But I haven't even really talked to my wife about it, honestly. That's the first person I'm going to have to talk to. So, we'll see if they say anything, and we'll go from there.
As one of the veteran leaders on this team, how did you see Rasmus sort of accept the challenge of being the captain this year, first season as a captain, and maybe grow and evolve in that role as the season went on?
Yeah, I saw a lot of growth out of Raz this year. I think that, I mean, on ice, you know what he can do. He's one of the best defensemen in the league, and he can take a game over. And I think he does a really good job of leading by example through his work ethic, through his grit, just his overall play. He's a guy that I go to battle with any day of the week. And honestly, it's just awesome to play with a guy like that. And then for just an away from the rink leadership thing, I think he learned a lot of what it takes to be a captain, and he also learned a lot about himself. And I'm really excited to see how much he grows as a person and as a player going forward. And you can just see him come into his own. You can see him get more comfortable each and every day. And that's key. That's huge. He's so young. I feel like at times he might think he's at the weight of the world on his shoulders, and because he really wants to win, and that's the most important thing to him. And that's the type of captain I want.
Was there a moment or example from this season that made you say, "Oh, I see him growing and becoming more comfortable in the world"?
No, I don't have one example. There's about 50 of them, so no.
Alex, I mean, you established yourself as one of the league's best upper tier, whatever, two-way forwards. What allowed you to reach that offensive level from a couple of years ago and then add to your game and have maybe a career season this year?
I think that, like I said, playing 82 games was a big thing for me, is just trying to be healthy and trying to be as consistent as possible. And I think that I wasn't as consistent as I wanted to be, but in the second half of the year, I really thought that I did a better job of being a little hungrier, maybe just sprinting a little bit more, just maybe bearing down in certain areas, knowing that, and my confidence also, when you're scoring, your confidence gets up a little bit. And so I was trying to keep my confidence as high as possible and being a game changer each and every night, I think. I try to do it defensively. I try to do it on all the entire length of the ice there. So I think that just trying to look for little things in my game to give me confidence and to be better in, I think, at times, help my success.
Tage already told me he's going to play for Team USA. Are you going to join him there?
Sadly, I can't. My wife gives birth in about 4 weeks to our second born son there. It's going to have to be an all hands on deck situation. But yeah, sadly, I won't be able to play in the World Championships. I would have loved to have gone, but I got to take care of my family.
You mentioned playing every game was a big goal, and I think last night you said, you know, you did some things differently maybe to just keep your body right. Like what did change maybe that helped you accomplish that goal?
Yeah, I think every year I've played in the league, I've learned a little bit about myself and my body, what I need to do, what I need to stay away from, and how I just go into each and every day. I think I took a little bit more steps in certain areas. I won't divulge too many details, but I've had some injuries or some nagging things that I think I was able to put on the back burner and really allow, with the help of the training staff and the strength and conditioning staff there, they really helped me maintain my physical well-being. Obviously, you're never going to go through a season without bumps and bruises, but I was able to minimize mine, so I was really happy with that.
He's talked about how the culture needed to change at some point this season. You know, in your view, how did the culture evolve? I know it changes from year to year because you get new guys, but you know, where were some of, I guess, the disappointing aspects to that, and how did you see growth throughout the year?
Yeah, I think that can obviously be translated in a lot of different things. I think of like needing the culture change, I think it's needing to play to an identity, needing to buy into that identity as a team, and needing to look at a team first mentality when going into games. And I think a lot of guys realize that when the team has success, your own personal success also elevates. So playing the right way might not always put you on the score sheet, but it'll help another guy and it'll help your team win. And more wins lead to confidence, and confidence leads to personal success. And so that shift the last 20 games, you can definitely see it in the way I think guys approach the game, the way guys maybe backchecked a little harder and sold out. It wasn't so much of fear of Lindy getting like mad at them, more so than just helping out your teammates and playing for one another. And I think that we can take a step further in that direction as well. Thanks, guys.
All right, that is Alex Tuck from down in the Sabres locker room. It is locker cleanout day. 14 straight years of locker cleanout day with no playoffs. There have been some years where it was absolutely expected that that would happen coming into the year. They were in a rebuild mode. There have been other years where, hey, you never know, they might be pretty decent. Going into this year, the expectation was this team needed to take a step. Everybody said it. Now, a lot of people, you out there might be saying, yeah, you knew they wouldn't make it. But the organization expected it, and they said it, and it didn't happen. And Lindy Ruff said he was disappointed at the end of the year. Kevin Adams confirmed that Lindy Ruff will be back next year. Paul Hamilton believes, as many others do, that Kevin Adams will be back next year. We'll see, though, what winds up happening and transpiring between now, the draft, start of next season. Hockey offseason is pretty short. They're back at it in a few months. Obviously, it's a little bit longer when you don't make the playoffs, but from the time the Stanley Cup ends till training camp, it's like 2 months. It's a pretty short hockey offseason. July 1st is when free agency opens, and of course, the Bills, the Sabres have a lot of RFAs they have to address, including J.J. Paterka, I think, is first and foremost. Devin Levi's on that list. Ryan McLeod's on that list. So there's going to be some some decisions that have to be made here about, you know, what to do. Bo Byram, a lot of the guys that, you know, you have to make decisions. And then, of course, the Owen Power injury, where hopefully doesn't lead into next year. We'll hopefully maybe try to bring you Jason Zucker as well coming up here. We'll see how the time goes here between now and noon when we end the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. But first, let's get to Steve in Ellicottville, who's been waiting patiently through listening to Alex Tuck, and I appreciate that. Go ahead, Steve. You're on WGR.
Hey, Sal. I just want to say thank you so much for all your work on and off the field. And my phone was blowing up last night during the Sabres game, watching it down there. And I'm getting messages from Tre'Davious' mother and the aunt said, we're coming home. And I'm thinking, what the heck is this, an April Fool's joke? And then my sister texts me from Buffalo, and all my friends, you know how big of a fan I am of Tre'Davious.
Are you saying you're friends with the mother and the aunt, and they were texting you?
Yes, yes. So we did a trip last summer, Penny and I, and we did 7,000 miles in 41 days, and one of our stops were Tre'Davious' aunt's house in Shreveport, Louisiana. And we just hit it off at every Bills game when they were fans here and Mafia members. And so we just stayed great friends, and they all were calling me and texting me last night. They're just excited, Sal.
That's a cool story. I don't know if you heard what I said at the top of the show, Steve, but at the end of the season for the Ravens after the game, Tre'Davious and I were talking a little bit after the game, and I said, hey, you're going to be a free agent. You know, what would you think of even about coming back here possibly? And he lit up and he said, I would love to be back here. I'd love to make that happen. You know, obviously he didn't know how things would go, but it was clear that, you know, he really had such an affinity for Buffalo and he would love that to happen. And now it has. So, you know, yeah, he is coming back. So thanks, Steve. Thanks for that story. Go ahead.
One more thing.
Yeah.
We always meet the family after the games, you know that. And so he came over, gave me a hug one day and said, thank you for loving my family. And that hits my heart all the time.
All right. Great story, Steve. Thank you. I appreciate it. And it doesn't surprise me knowing Tre'Davious, how I do both on and off the field as well. We will take a timeout. When we come back, we'll bring you Jason Zucker as well, or at least a portion of Jason Zucker from down in the locker room, a player the Sabres, you know, brought in this year and had a nice year for a veteran, and to the point where they said, we need to re-sign this guy. Even at his age, he can help us going forward with some of the young players they have. So Jason Zucker from down the locker room, but your calls as well, still welcome at 803-0550. And you can also tweet me at Sal Sports here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's Alex Tuck playing it across. Bernard Docker gaining the Flyers line. He'll continue a play down. Here's Tuck in front, scores! Great feed, Alex Tuck. And the Rick Martin Memorial Award winner makes it 1-0.
All right. We just heard from Alex Tuck. Let's go down to the Sabres KeyBank Center locker cleanout day. Here is Jason Zucker, veteran the Sabres signed this year, who re-signed with the club a little bit before the trade deadline.
You know you're going to be here next year, and your look for the future.
I mean, I think ultimately we failed, right? I mean, we didn't accomplish our goals of getting to the playoffs and becoming a playoff team. And I think that's a big piece of what we need to take into the off season is that. I think there's things we can look positively on, guys having career years and guys playing well, and a lot of little things that I think we can take as positives and bring into next year. But I think we ultimately need to look at it as we weren't good enough, and I think I'm going to take that as being one of the old guys, the oldest guy, it's not good enough. And, we need to raise our standard individually and bring that into, the summer, have better summer training, and ultimately come back better next year.
Jason, what changed maybe over the last month, 6 weeks, that might give you a little more hope that, shows that everything started to maybe click or sink in?
Yeah, I mean, I think hope is, I had a coach at one point tell me that hope is a strategy, and so I'm gonna stick to that. And I think there's no hope. I think for us it's understanding what helps you win, and I think we are the last month is something that I think we stuck to that a little bit more of what goes into winning. And it was something that I think from the coaching staff down, I think we, I'll even say general manager down, right? Having meetings and understanding a little bit more what goes into winning games. And that's, what avenues within a game are going to matter most. I mean, if we look at last night's game, I think we have a pretty good first period. I turn a puck over for Owen Tippett, one of their best players, to go have a breakaway. It's not ideal, right? So having your most veteran guy doing that, and when you're up, what was it, 1-0 or 2-0 in that game, that's a terrible message to send to the bench, right? Did I mean to turn it over? No, of course not. But that was a play that at that point of the game is not needed. It was a play that towards the end of my shift is not a smart play. Then you look forward to a power play, right? When we're up 2-1 or maybe 2-0 at the time, arguably one of our worst power plays of the year. Give Hathaway a breakaway, they get scoring chances, they get all this stuff, and give them momentum in a game that really should have been going the other way. So those are the type scenarios that when I'm saying we need to understand how to win, that's not how to win. And that's what I think throughout the last month we did a lot better of a job doing, is recognize those situations and doing the right things to help us win games. I think ultimately throughout the year we had a lot of scenarios where we lost games ourselves, and that hurt us the most.
Jason, I know that culture is such a buzzword in pro sports, but how would you say that the team culture evolved this season, and what sort of challenges did you guys face throughout the year in that respect?
Yeah, I mean, culture is. I think culture is earned. I think it's something that ultimately throughout a season, you earn it by doing the right things with your teammates and doing the right things throughout the league. And I think that ends up changing the way teams play against you. I think it turns into a lot of things that ultimately help you win games. And, you know, I think we took a step in the right direction, I think, especially this last month. But again, it wasn't good enough. And I'm going to put that on me. That's going to be something that I'm going to look myself in the mirror and see what I can do better to help the young guys, help the older guys, you know, the leadership group, and see if we can take a big step this off season.
I guess the disappointing aspect was it negativity or doubt that maybe creeped in when it comes to just the culture? I mean, a lot of these guys haven't won yet in this league.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, I was lucky enough to make the playoffs, I think, 7 straight years in Minnesota, we missed one year for sure. You know, so call it 6 of 7 years there. And I think the culture there was, I mean, what's funny is the year I signed out of college, they were a lottery pick team, you know, and that summer they signed Parisi and Suter, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, we're a winning team now. We're a playoff team. It was just the mentality going into it that was like, no, we're a playoff team now. That's just what it was. Granted, they still had a lot of good players, you know, and they had, you know, Koivu, and, you know, they had a ton of really good players, but so do we. And I think the mentality definitely needs to change of you know, being where we are versus where we want to go. And again, that kind of goes back to what you were saying. It's not a hope thing. It's a mentality. It's a mindset. And I think we need to change that.
Jason, as you sit here at the end, obviously 13 losses in a row, we understand what the results meant ultimately to the season, but when you reflect on that particular period, how impactful, maybe beyond the actual losses, was that streak that you guys went on to the end results?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at that, I think that was obviously it was a massive piece. I think what struck me most about it was actually later on, when I think we had, I don't know, 10 games left, or what was it? And we still technically weren't out. You know, we still had a chance in some way, even though it was a small chance, we still had a chance. So when you look at it at that point, you're like, wow, okay, that is really where it hit me personally the most. Obviously, when you're going through it, you're in the thick of it. You're doing everything you can to get out of it and try to help the team win. And, you know, I think we actually played some really good hockey, oddly enough, at the beginning of that stretch, and we just didn't get wins, and it just kept piling on. But, you know, I put a lot of that on me, not helping get out of that enough, not playing well enough, and trying to push the guys to another level to get out of that earlier. But again, I think it just struck me the most at the end when we still had a chance with like 10 games left. You know, mathematically we were still in it in some way. It was like, wow, if we just would have won 3 of those games, you know, how different of a spot we'd be in. Not saying we needed to win 10 of the 13, just 3 of them, you know, would have made a massive difference. And so it's disappointing, you know, but again, I think for me, having been in a situation similar to that in my career, you know, I wish I would have done more to help the guys and you know, try to do a little bit more during that stretch. So, you know, I'll try to be better on that for next year if we ever get in that scenario again.
Jason, kind of going back to the culture point, half the teams in the league are getting ready for the playoffs. The other half are doing what we're doing here. And that group, there's a lot of differences in it. You have San Jose and Chicago where they are, Anaheim in a different stretch, Columbus with all they went through. And then you look at your situation here. What was it like coming in here the first time for the first year? And this organization has this albatross over it that none of the other ones do. You know, the longest playoff drought in the history of the league. You hear it over and over again. The media brings it up. The fans bring it up. Every time a losing streak starts, you know, the here we go again kind of plays in this town with this team. How difficult was that to grasp that is kind of everywhere in the building until someday when it's not?
I mean, I'm going to be honest. I never heard a word of it until I got here. You know, there's not this aura of the Sabres over the league. I said this during the stretch, too. I honestly disagree. You guys are in it, right? And now I'm in it with you and with everyone else in this city, and we're all in it together now. But there's not this aura that is just the Sabres or just the laughingstock of the league. That's not what it is. Yeah, it's obviously been a tough stretch for the team, and I'm learning all this throughout this year. But I'll say, you know, last year when I was in Arizona, that felt a heck of a lot worse. You know, I'm going to be honest with you, and that's no knock on the Arizona Coyotes. I absolutely love my time there, but they were playing in a college arena in front of 20 and not even selling it out every night. And now ultimately getting moved to Utah and, you know, like all these things. So, you know, you look at guys like Clayton Keller and Krause and those guys, we're talking about missing the playoffs. They had never played in front of an NHL home arena, like home fan base. So it's easy to sit here and look at your situation when you report on the Buffalo Sabres and you look at this organization being in it and being, I'm sure, a fan, hopefully, for so many years. But it's way different when you're on the outside than when you're on the inside looking at a, you know, a, what is it, 15-year drought of the playoffs. But, you know, there's, you know, I'll say the, you know, there's just a lot more of that from the inside than the outside.
How do you collectively as a team fix the power play? I think from the outside looking in, it would be easy to say this team has Rasmus Dahlin and Tage Thompson. How does the power play continue to be a problem? How do you fix it knowing that so many of the pieces that were on the power play this year will probably also be on the power play next year?
Yeah, I think it's self-growth, honestly. I think it's, you know, I think JJ took a big step as a half-wall guy this year, learning kind of the intricacies of a power play. You know, ultimately, we know how good Tomer can be on the power play, but so do other teams, you know, and so they obviously they just try to take him away. It's easy to say that when Washington has had the same issue with a guy that just scored almost his 900th goal. So, you know, there's ways around it, and we got to be better. I mean, that's the number one key. We got to find ways to get Tomer open a little bit more. I think we got to find ways to use Dahlin and his skills a little bit more up at the blue line and make him more of a threat. And I think we were working through that at certain times. And I think we had a lot of success for certain periods, just not sustained enough. And I think that's going to be, again, a big piece that we try to work on because it's about sustaining it. And I think, you know, Lindy had told me a stat. I think our power play was like 8% during our 13-game losing streak. You know, and don't quote me on that because I didn't. Someone told me that, but you know, it's like that. That's a big reason why we went on a 13-game losing streak, is our special teams wasn't good enough for that stretch and for a lot of different stretches. But I think we also went through some stretches where we were in the upper 20s. So it's about finding consistency, and I think throughout a lot of our game, not just the power play, we need to be more consistent.
Was it about, you know, when you signed that contract extension at the deadline, I'm curious, what was it about Kevin and Lindy's vision that made you want to, you know, in the later part of your career, stick around and kind of, but gave you the confidence that there's better things ahead?
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about Lindy and Kevin and their vision and the organization and the vision and that and all these things, but ultimately, I don't feel I did a good enough job here this year in helping and teaching what I was lucky enough to have the old guys teach me when I was coming up. And I think that was a big piece for me. I think, you know, I want to, you know, take a deep dive into what I did as a leader and didn't do as a leader, quite honestly, and hopefully be better at next year. And I think it's an exciting task for me. Everything you do in your career goes through transitions. It's no different for hockey players than it is for you guys, as it is for everyone else in this world. You go through transitions in your life, and I think for me, you know, I still absolutely love playing this game. But I'll say I was just as excited seeing Ryan McLeod score his 20th goal last night as, you know, when I look back at my career in my first year scoring 20. Like, it's so fun to see that type of stuff now. And again, I think I want to keep building myself and helping this team and this organization. And I think the guys are just a great group of guys, and I think they all care and they all want to win. And for me, I'd just love to be a part of that.
Well, Yuri Kulik, I mean, he's talked many times about what you've done for him this year. You took him under your wing, and I would watch during games when you were on the same line. You were always talking to him as you came off the ice that brought the shift and everything else. Is it fun to see his growth that you got to see this year and what he was able to accomplish? And I remember the first time I asked about you, he goes, I was afraid of him the first time I got here. But
he didn't even introduce himself to me.
He did appreciate what you did. Is it fun to see the growth you saw in him throughout the year?
Yeah, I think so. Do you think I helped him miss an empty net and hitting a ref last night? I'm not going to let him live that one down for a long time. You know, I think Cooley is an unbelievable player, and he's going to be for a long time in this league. And I think the Sabre fans should be extremely excited about him and his game. I think the one thing that I think gets overlooked with him more than anything else is just like the matchups he had this year. You know, like even going back to just a couple games ago playing Toronto, I mean, he's playing every shift against Matthews and Marner, you know, and Nyes, and he's doing a hell of a job of it. I think he is an extremely good two-way centerman, and I think he's going to be a very good player. And I think he was a huge reason why Tomer had 45 goals or whatever it was this year too. I think he's just a great player. He's a great person. It's been fun to get to know him and try to, you know, just help him grow as a player. And I'm really excited for him for next year. I think he's going to take a big step. So I think it'll be fun to watch.
Okay, that is Jason Zucker down at KeyBank Center. I got to tell you, like, I don't cover the Sabres like I cover the Bills, obviously, and we talk about them here. Like, I've never had an extended conversations with Jason Zucker. I could talk hockey with that guy all day. He is super impressive. That was great. I mean, you know, he's not giving you like incredible, you know, secret to the sauce, like, oh my God, revelations, but he's thoughtful. He understands, I think, what the media is asking him and how he wants to kind of take it from the player side and the media side. There was a spot in there where he's like, yeah, from you guys, and I know how you look at it. This is how we look at it. That was just really good. I really enjoyed that from Jason Zucker. Unfortunately, comes at the heels of a Sabres season that again resulted in no playoffs. Paul's down there in the locker room. He'll have a lot more for all of us and you at PHAM1717, of course, on social media, on Twitter, and of course, at WGR550.com. We'll take one final timeout. We'll come back and wrap up your Friday here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. All right, there's no Sabres Live or One Bills Live today, so we got our guys Zach Jones and Derek Kramer going to be taking over here for the next few hours. What's up, guys? How are you?
Good. How you doing,
Sal? We're chilling.
Pretty good. How about the fact that as of maybe, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock yesterday, you didn't really have a ton of content? I'm sure you would have stuff to talk about then. Boom! I mean, you just have a lot of content today with Tre'Davious White signing.
I'm just happy that the goalie academy is back open and maybe the Sabres have a chance to improve in the net.
No doubt. I mean, that was one of the kind of memes and jokes that went around yesterday after it was announced that and reported he was coming back. People said, is he coming to play goalie for the Buffalo Sabres? Because maybe that was more needed for what's happening right now.
It's a bit of a weakness this year, Sal, unfortunately. Yeah. But we'll talk plenty about that. We'll have Matt Larkin on at 1 o'clock to talk about the Sabres, as well as the Stanley Cup playoffs, as the field was set last night. Not last night, 2 nights ago. And then, of course, we'll be talking so much draft that I don't know how else to describe it. It's just so much draft. You've never heard more draft in your life. All
well,
of
you
the
got,
draft.
What, 3 hours, right? Three hours worth of all this. I mean, you got Paul
draft.
Down at the Sabres locker area, obviously. Locker clean-out day. You got the draft coming up. And, of course, Easter weekend, guys. So I just want to take this time to say happy Easter to you and your families out there and to, obviously, everybody listening.
Happy Easter to you and your family as well, Sal.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. You got Derek and Zach coming up next here on WGR. Have a great, happy Easter, everybody. I'll talk to you on Monday.